This wasn't a place where women went voluntarily. We took a moment to allow our eyes to adjust to the dark interior. Four men at the bar, one bartender, a lone man sitting at a scarred round wood table. Jamil Rodriguez. He was easy to recognize from his photo. A medium-sized black man in a rhinestone do-rag, cheesy mustache and goatee, a nasty scar etched into his cheek, looking like an acid burn. He slouched back in his chair.
Ladies?
You Jamil? Lula asked. He nodded his head, yes.
You got business with me?
Lula looked at me and smiled.
This fool thinks we're gonna buy some.
I pulled a chair up next to Rodriguez. Here's the thing, Jamil, I said. You forgot to show up for court. And I slapped a cuff on him.
You sit around and wait and good things come to you, Rodriguez said. I've been looking for a new thumb.
And he pulled a big buck knife out of his pocket. The four guys at the bar were paying attention, waiting to see the show. They were young, and they looked hungry for action. I suspected they'd jump in when it was the right time. Lula pulled a gun out of her tiger-print stretch pants and leveled it at Rodriguez. And from the doorway, there was the unmistakable ratchet of a sawed-off shotgun. I didn't recognize the guy in black filling the doorway, but I knew he'd come from the SUV. Not hard to spot one of Ranger's men. Big muscles, no neck, big gun, not much small talk.
You want to drop the knife, I said to Rodriguez.
Rodriguez narrowed his eyes.
Make me.
Ranger's man blasted a 3-foot hole in the ceiling over Rodriguez, and plaster flew everywhere.
Hey, Lula said to Ranger's man, you want to watch it? I just had my hair done. I don't need no plaster in it. Next time, just shoot a hole in this punk-ass loser, will ya?
Ranger's man smiled at her. Minutes later, we had Rodriguez in the back seat of the Cayenne, cuffed and shackled, and we were on our way to the police station.
Did you see that hunk of burning love smile at me? Lula said. Was he hot or what? Did you see the size of his gun? I'm telling you, I'm getting a flash. I could have a piece of that. How about a piece of this? Rodriguez said. You watch your mouth, Lula said. You're close to being roadkill. We could throw you out and run over you and nobody'd know the difference.
I took third to State and headed south on State. I went one block, stopped for a light, and when the light changed, Harold Panchek passed me going in the opposite direction in his blue Honda Civic.
Holy cow, Lula said. Did you see him? That was Harold Panchek. I'd know him anywhere with his yellow square head.
I was already in motion, making an illegal U-turn. I did some aggressive driving and got myself directly behind Panchek. Ranger's guys had been caught by surprise and were struggling to catch up, two cars back. We stopped for another light, and Lula jumped out of the Porsche and ran for Panchek. She had her hand on the passenger side door when he looked around and saw her. The light changed, and Panchek took off. Lula climbed back into the Porsche, and I closed the gap. I was riding close on his bumper, hoping he'd get demoralized and stop. He was checking his rear mirrors, weaving around traffic, taking side streets in an attempt to lose me.
He don't know where he's going, Lula said. He's just trying to get away from you. I bet he's never been in this neighborhood before.
That was my guess, too. We were in a poor section of Trenton, heading toward an even worse section of Trenton. Panchek drove like a bat out of hell down four blocks on 6th Street. I hit the brakes when Panchek crossed Lime. Comstock was one block away. Comstock was Slayerland. I wasn't following Panchek into Slayerland. Do we have a cell phone number for Panchek? I asked Lula. Can we warn him he's in Slayerland?
We never got a cell for him, Lula said. And anyway, it's too late. He's turned up Comstock.
I slowly cruised a couple blocks on Lime, hoping Panchek would pop out of Slayerland. No luck. So I turned around and pointed the Porsche in the direction of North Clinton. When we got to the station, I left Lula with the Cayenne, and I marched Rodriguez in through the front door. I know it was moronic, but I wanted the guys to see I could capture a man with all his clothes on. It was close to 5, and Morelli was gone for the day. Thank God for small favors. I didn't know what to do about Morelli. Thanks to Ranger's stupid shower gel, face-to-face meetings with Morelli were now beyond uncomfortable. Okay, let's be honest. It was more than the shower gel. It was Ranger. The man was deadly sexy. And he was walking around without underwear. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I gave myself a mental face slap. Get a grip, I told myself. You don't really know for sure. Just because you didn't find any underwear doesn't mean he doesn't own any. Maybe they were all in the laundry. All right, so this was a little improbable. I was going to go with it anyway, because the thought of standing next to Ranger when he was commando had me in a state. Connie had closed up shop by the time I got back to the bonds office, so I dropped Lula at her car, and I returned to the Rangeman building. The black SUV followed me into the garage and parked in one of the side slots. Two of the four slots reserved for Ranger were occupied. The Mercedes and Turbo were in place. The truck was missing. I parked the Cayenne next to the Turbo, walked over to the SUV, and knocked on the passenger side window. "Thanks for the help," I said. The guy in the passenger seat nodded acknowledgement. Neither said anything. I gave them something between a smile and a grimace, and I scurried off to the elevator. I let myself into the apartment and dropped the keys in the dish on the sideboard. The sideboard also held a bowl of fresh fruit and a silver tray filled with unopened mail. I was in the process of selecting a piece of fruit when I heard the lock tumble on the front door. I slipped the bolt back and opened the door to Ranger. He tossed his keys into the dish and rifled through the mail, not opening any.
"How was your day?" he asked.
"Good. You were right about Rodriguez. He was open for business at the bar on 3rd and Laramie." I didn't have to say more. I was sure Ranger had already gotten a full report.
"Who's getting married?"
"Valerie." There was a knock at the door, and Ella came in with a food tray.
"Would you like me to set the table?" she asked.
"Not necessary," Ranger said. "You can just leave the tray in the kitchen."
Ella swept past us, deposited the food, and returned to the front foyer.
"Is there anything else?" she asked.
"No," Ranger said. "We're good for the night. Thank you."
I couldn't believe the big, bad Special Forces survival nut lived like this. Clothes washed and ironed, bed made, gourmet food delivered daily. Ranger locked the door after Ella and followed me into the kitchen.
"This is ruining my image, isn't it?" Ranger said.
"All this time I thought you were so tough. I imagined you sleeping on a dirt floor somewhere." He uncovered one of the dishes.
"There were years like that."
Ella had brought us roasted vegetables, wild rice, and chicken in a lemon sauce. We filled plates and ate at the counter, sitting on bar stools. I finished my chicken and looked over at the silver tray. "No dessert?" Ranger pushed back from the counter.
"Sorry, I don't eat dessert. Where is you keeping your slayer?"
"Vinny's house in Point Pleasant."
"Who knows about this?"
"Connie, Lula, and me." He reached across, unzipped my sweatshirt, and released the Velcro tabs on the vest.
"This isn't going to help you, babe," he said. "Junkman shot his last two victims in the head."
I removed the sweatshirt and the vest and put the sweatshirt back on. It had stopped raining, but it had gotten cooler. Ranger dialed Ella and told her we were leaving. He got a utility belt and sweatshirt from the dressing room. The black nylon web belt carried a gun, a stun gun, pepper spray, cuffs, and a mag light, plus ammo. We left the apartment, locked up, and took the elevator. There were two men waiting in the garage. I knew them both, Tank and Hal. They took a black Ford Explorer, and Ranger and I took the Porsche Turbo. Ranger was wearing the sweatshirt. The belt was in the back. We rolled out of the garage and cut over to Broad. It was a dark, moonless night. The cloud cover was low, threatening more rain. The SUV's headlights stayed constant behind us. Ranger was silent, driving relaxed, his sweatshirt sleeves pushed halfway up his forearms, his watch catching the occasional light from overhead streetlights. I wasn't nearly so relaxed. I was worried that Anton Ward might have escaped, and I was worried that he might still be there. "You aren't going to hurt him, are you?" I asked Ranger. Ranger flicked a glance at me via the rearview mirror.
"Babe," he said.
"I know he probably killed a couple people," I said, "but but I'm sort of responsible for his safety.
You want to explain that?
I told Ranger how we bonded Ward out and then kidnapped him.
Nice, Ranger said.
Vinny's street was totally black, not a single light burning. Ranger tucked the Porsche into the driveway, and Tank pulled the SUV in behind him.
I can leave you in the car with Hal, Ranger said, getting the belt from the back. Would you feel more comfortable with that?
No, I'm coming in. The house was quiet, but I could feel Ward's sullen presence. He was in the bathroom just as we left him, shackled to the toilet and sink pipe. He didn't look happy to see Ranger.
Do you know who I am? Ranger asked him quietly.
Ward nodded his head, checking out the belt with the gun and the mag light.
Yeah, I know who you are.
I'm going to ask you some questions, Ranger said, and you need to give me the right answers.
Ward's eyes darted from me to Ranger and beyond Ranger to Tank.
If you don't give me the right answers, I'm going to leave you alone in the house with Tank and Hal, Ranger said. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand.
Tell me about Junkman.
Nothing to tell. He's from out of town, L.A. Nobody even knows his name, just Junkman.
Where does he live?
Moves around, living with the bitches. Always got a new bitch. We're not exactly best friends, you know? Like, I don't know his bitches.
What's the deal with the killing? What's the list about?
Hey, man, I can't talk to you about these things. I'm a brother.
Ranger whacked Ward in the knee with the mag light, and Ward went down like a sack of sand.
Anybody finds out I talk to you, I'm a dead man, Ward said, holding his knee.
You don't talk to me, and you're going to wish you were dead, Ranger said.
It's about being 5-star general. Junkman was a lieutenant in the organization out in L.A. He got sent here to take over on account of Trenton's had some leadership problems. Power vacuum after our OG, Moody Black, got taken out. Only thing, Junkman gotta impress some members first. He gotta eat some serious food, you know. Like, he has to make some kills that count. He already took out a second Crown of the Kings and an enforcer. What he's got left is a cop and Sweetie Pie here.
Why Stephanie?
She's a bounty hunter. She collected a bunch of the brothers, and it's not good to get collected by snatch. It's not got a high prestige factor. So for Junkman's last proof of worthiness, the council decided he had to give the members some bounty hunter. The plan is he catches a snatch and passes it around to the members before he does her. She's part of the coronation.
My vision got cobwebby, and there was a loud clanging in my head. I staggered out of the bathroom and collapsed on the couch in the living room. My mother and Morelli were right. I needed a new job. I heard the door to the bathroom close, and Ranger came over and squatted beside me.
Are you okay?
He asked. I'm fine. It was getting boring, so I thought I'd take a nap. This got me the almost smile.
We're done with Anton Ward. Did you have plans for him?
I was going to revoke his bond and put him back in jail.
And the reason for this?
He agreed to wear a PTU and then refused when we got him released, escaping out the bonds office bathroom window before we could install the unit.
I'll have Tank take care of it. We'll hold him over until tomorrow morning so we can get the paperwork straight. Did you bring him in blindfolded?
He was wrapped in a blanket. It was dark, and I doubt he saw much. It took 40 minutes to get back to Trenton, and neither of us spoke. Normal for Ranger, not normal for me. I had a lot of thoughts in my head, but almost none of them were thoughts I wanted to say out loud. Ranger parked the car, and we got out together. When we got in the elevator, he touched the number 4 button. What's on the 4th floor? I asked.
Studio apartments that are available to range man employees. I move one of the men out so you could have your own place until it's safe for you to leave.
The doors opened to the 4th floor, and Ranger wrapped my hand around a key.
Don't expect me to always be this civilized.
I'm undone. I don't know what to say. Ranger took the key back, crossed the hall, and opened the door to 4B. He flipped the light on, gave me the key, and shoved me inside.
Lock the door before I change my mind, he said. Hit 7 if you need me.
I closed and locked the door and looked around. Kitchenette against one wall. Queen-size bed in an alcove. Writing desk and chair. Comfy-looking leather couch. Coffee table and television. All done in earth tones, clean and tasteful. The bed was made with fresh sheets. The bathroom had clean towels and a basket of toiletries. My clothes were freshly washed and folded in a wicker basket at the edge of the sleeping alcove. I took a shower and got dressed in a clean t-shirt and boxer shorts. The boxers weren't black and silky and sexy like Ranger's. They were soft cotton, pink with little yellow daisies. Seemed just right for spending an evening alone, pretending life was safe and happy. It was a couple minutes after 10, so I called Morelli at home. No answer. Painful contraction around my heart, resulting from irrational stab of jealous insecurity. If I was having a hard time keeping my hands off Ranger, Morelli could be having a similar problem. Women followed him down the street and committed crimes hoping to meet him. Morelli wouldn't have a problem finding a sympathetic body to sleep beside. Morelli with another woman wasn't an appealing thought, so I sunk into the couch and did some channel surfing, looking for a diversion. I settled on a West Coast ball game. I watched for 10 minutes, but couldn't get involved. I channel surfed some more. I looked up at the ceiling. Ranger was 3 floors above me. It was more comfortable to think about Ranger than to think about Morelli. Thinking about Ranger got me overheated and frustrated. Thinking about Morelli got me sad. I shut the television off, crawled into bed, and ordered myself to go to sleep. A half hour later, I was still awake. The little room felt sterile. It was safe, but it gave no comfort. The pillow didn't smell like Ranger. And Anton Ward's words kept cycling through my brain. A tear slid out of my eye. Jeez, what was the deal with the tears? It wasn't even that time of the month. Maybe it was my diet. Not enough tasty cakes. Too many vegetables. I got out of bed, grabbed all my keys, and took the elevator to the 7th floor. I marched across the foyer and rang Ranger's bell. I was ready to ring it a second time when he opened the door. He was still dressed in the black t-shirt and cargo pants. I was thankful for this. I thought I could manage to keep from ripping the cargo pants off him. I wasn't sure about the black silk boxers. "It's lonely on the 4th floor, I said, "and your sheets are nicer than mine."
"Ordinarily, I'd take that as a sexual invitation. But after this morning, I'm going to guess you just want my sheets."
"Actually, I was hoping I could sleep on your couch." Ranger pulled me into his apartment and locked the door.
"You can sleep anywhere you want, but I'm not going to be responsible for my actions if you fondle me again when I'm sleeping."
"I didn't fondle you." We were at the breakfast table, and Ranger was watching me eat a croissant.
"Tell me the truth," Ranger said. "Were you really freaked out last night, or did you just want my sheets and my shower gel and my food?"
I smiled at him while I chewed. "Does it matter?" Ranger thought about it for a long moment.
"Only minimally."
I'd slept on his couch, wrapped in a down comforter, my head on one of his pillows with a wonderful smooth pillowcase. It wasn't as comfy as his bed, but it had been guilt-free.
"I got some bad news while you were in the shower this morning," Ranger said. "Junkman tagged his cop."
My heart stuttered. "Anyone I know?"
"No. He was a member of the State Police Street Gang Unit. He was working locally, but he was based out of North Jersey."
I was next up.
"Junkman will get taken out," Ranger said. "There are a lot of people looking for him. In the meantime, I want you to stay in the building. If I don't have to worry about you, I can have 2 extra men on the street tracking Junkman."
Fine by me. I wasn't anxious to be part of Junkman's coronation ceremony. And staying in Ranger's apartment wasn't a hardship. I poured more coffee into my mug. "You have a lot of overhead here. How can you afford to have men following me around and looking for Junkman?"
"Junkman just killed a state cop. There's a big enough reward for Junkman to justify assigning some manpower to search for him. There's no monetary way to justify a security detail to watch over you. I bleed money every time you need protection.
I didn't know how to respond. I'd never really thought about Ranger as a businessman. He'd always seemed more like a superhero, recruiting men and cars from a parallel galaxy, or at the very least, from the mob.
Geez, I said. I'm sorry.
Ranger finished his coffee and stood.
I said there was no monetary way to justify your security. The truth is, you're a line item in my budget.
I followed him into the bedroom and watched while he got his gun, checked it out, and attached it to his belt.
I have you listed under entertainment, Ranger said,
sliding money and credit cards into his pants pocket.
This is a high-stress business, and you're comedy relief for my entire team. Plus, I get a tax break.
My eyes opened wide, and my eyebrows shot up an inch into my forehead. This didn't sound flattering.
Comedy relief?
Ranger gave me one of his rare, full-on smiles.
I like you. We all like you.
He grabbed me by the front of my shirt, lifted me 2 inches off the ground, and kissed me.
The truth is, I love you. In my own way.
He set me back down and turned to go.
Have a nice day, and remember, you're on camera the instant you leave this apartment. I've given orders to stun gun you if you try to leave the building.
And Ranger was gone. I was totally flummoxed. I had no idea when Ranger was serious and when he was kidding. There was no doubt in my mind that I amused him. In the past, the amusement always felt affectionate, never malicious. Being a line item under entertainment was pushing it. And what the heck was I supposed to think about the I love you that was qualified by in my own way? I was supposed to think it was nice, I decided. I loved him in my own way, too. The front bell chimed, and I opened the door to Ella. She had the basket of clean clothes I'd left in the fourth floor room.
Ranger asked me to bring these up to you, Ella said. And your phone is in the basket, too. It was on the night table.
She collected the breakfast tray and turned to leave.
When would be a good time for me to come in to clean? She asked.
Whenever it's convenient for you.
I can tidy up right now, she said. I won't be long. There isn't much to do today.
Not counting my mother, no one had ever cleaned or cooked for me. I wasn't in the income bracket to have a housekeeper. I didn't know anyone other than Ranger who had help. It was a luxury I'd always wanted, but it was uncharted territory for me right now, and it felt weird. It was one thing for Ella to come in and make Ranger's life easier while he was out catching desperados. It was totally different to have her cleaning up my mess while I sat around watching television. Chapter 15. I solved the Ella problem by helping her make the bed and straighten the apartment. She wouldn't allow me to touch the laundry, not wanting to be held responsible should I mix Ranger's blacks with his whites. Although from what I could see, he didn't have any whites, other than sheets. We'd moved from the bedroom to the bathroom. Ella was setting out fresh towels, and I was smelling the soap.
I love this soap, I said. My sister works on the cosmetic floor of a department store, and she gave me a sample of the Bulgari. It's very expensive, but it suits Ranger. Not that Ranger would notice. All he thinks about is work. Such a nice, handsome young man, and no girlfriend. Until you.
I'm not exactly a girlfriend.
Ella stood straight and did a sharp inhale, focusing her snapping bird eyes on me. He isn't paying you, is he? Like the way Richard Gere was paying Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman? No, Ranger and I work together. I'm a bounty hunter.
Maybe you'll become a girlfriend, she said hopefully.
Maybe,
but doubtful. In this case, I didn't think love and sex equated to boyfriend.
Do you take care of all his properties? I asked Ella.
Just this building. I take care of the apartments on the fourth floor and Ranger. My husband Louis takes care of everything else.
Rats. I was hoping to get a lead on the Batcave.
Ella gathered the day's laundry and turned to go.
Would you like me to bring lunch? She asked. Ranger is never home for lunch, but I'd be happy to make you a sandwich and a nice salad.
Not necessary, I said. I have some sandwich things here, but thank you for offering. I let Ella out, and my cell phone rang.
Everybody's been trying to get you, Grandma said. You haven't been answering your phone.
I misplaced it.
Your sister's driving us nuts. Ever since that fitting, she's been impossible. I swear, I never saw anybody with such wedding jitters. I don't want to think about what's going to happen if Valerie backs out. Your mother's hitting the sauce as is. Not that I blame her. I take a nip now and then, too, what with all the googie bear and oogie woogie snuggie sweetie stuff. Anyway, I just called to see if you wanted to go to the shower with Sally and me. Your mother's bringing Valerie.
Thanks, I said, but I'll get myself to the shower. Silent groan. The shower was Friday, and I didn't have a present. If Junkman was going to kill me, let it be today, I thought. At least I'd get out of the shower. I disconnected and dialed Morelli.
What? He answered, not happy.
It's me, I said. Have you been trying to call me?
Yeah. I worked a double shift yesterday running down leads on Junkman. It was after 11 before I got home and checked my phone. Next time, leave a message so I know you're okay. Seeing your number pop up on my caller ID and then not being able to reach you doesn't do a lot for my acid reflux.
Sorry, I wasn't calling for anything special, and then I misplaced my phone.
Junkman got his cop.
I just heard.
I'd feel better if I knew where you were.
No, you wouldn't, I said. But you'd worry less.
I can read between the lines on that one, Morelli said. Be careful.
No ranting and raving, no jealous accusations, just an affectionate, be careful. You trust me, I said.
Yeah.
That's really rotten.
I know. Live with it.
I could sense the smile. I was entertainment for Morelli, too. I disconnected and called Valerie. What's going on? I asked her. Grandma says you're having a meltdown.
I saw myself in the gown and I had a total panic attack. It wasn't just that I was fat, either. It was everything, all the fuss. I know it's my own fault. I wanted a wedding, but it's gotten really scary, and now I have to get through a shower. 78 women in the VFW hall. Good thing there isn't a gun in the house because I'd shoot myself.
The shower is supposed to be a secret.
I planned it. What was I thinking? And what if this marriage doesn't work out? I thought my first marriage was perfect. I was clueless.
Albert's a nice guy. You're not going to find him in the coat closet with the babysitter. You'll have a nice, comfortable life with Albert. And that couldn't be said for the two men in my life, I thought. They were volatile, domineering alpha males. Life wouldn't be dull with either of them, but it also wouldn't be easy. Maybe you should elope, I told Valerie. Just go off and quietly get married and get on with your life.
I couldn't do that to Mom.
She might be relieved. Okay. I have to admit this was self-serving because I really didn't want to wear the eggplant gown. Still, I thought it was decent advice.
I'll think about it,
Valerie said. Just don't tell anyone I gave you the idea. I hung up and went into the kitchen to say hello to Rex. I dropped a couple frosted flakes into his cage. He rushed out of a soup can, whiskers twitching, shoved the cereal into his cheek, and rushed back to the soup can. Okay, that was fun. But now what? What do people do all day when they have nothing to do? I flipped the television on and surfed through about 40 channels, finding nothing. How could there be so little on so many channels? I called the office. What's going on? I asked Connie.
Ranger was in. He's looking for Junkman. He's got a lot of company. Every bounty hunter and every cop in the state is looking for Junkman. You heard about the latest killing?
I heard.
Did you also hear about Pancheck? He was shot in the head last night at the corner of Comstock and 7th. Somehow he drove 4 more blocks before he lost consciousness and crashed his car. He's at St. Francis. It looks like he's going to make it.
My fault, I said. I chased him into Slayerland.
Wrong, Connie said. You followed him to Slayerland. Since you're not here, I'm assuming you're hiding?
That's the plan, but it's getting old.
Yeah, you've been at it for what, 3 or 4 hours?
I got off the phone with Connie and shuffled into the bedroom to take a nap. I stood at the edge of the bed and couldn't bring myself to get in and wrinkle the perfectly ironed sheets. I looked to the bathroom. I'd already taken a shower. I went back to the kitchen and shook Rex's aquarium.
"Get up, you stupid hamster," I said. "I'm bored."
There was a slight rustling in the soup can as Rex hunkered in deeper. I could explore the building, but that would involve interaction with Ranger's men. I wasn't sure I was ready for that, especially since they might be stun gun ready should I make a break for freedom. I called Ranger on his cell phone. Ranger answered with a soft,
"Yo."
"Yo yourself," I said. "I'm going nuts here. What am I supposed to do? There's nothing good on television. There are no books or magazines, no cross-stitch, needlepoint, knitting. And don't suggest I go to the gym. It's not going to happen."
Ranger disconnected. I punched his number in again.
"What was that?" I said. "You disconnected me."
"Babe,"
Ranger said. I did a sigh and hung up. Ranger walked through the door a few minutes after 6. He tossed his keys into the dish and did a cursory shuffle of the mail Ella had brought up earlier. He looked up from the mail and locked eyes with me.
"Sure looking a little crazy, babe."
I was coming off 5 hours of television and 2 hours of hall pacing.
"I'm leaving now," I said. "I'm going to the mall, and I just waited around so I could say thank you. I appreciate the use of your apartment, and I'm going to miss the shower gel big time, but I have to go. So it would be good if you made sure no one stun-gunned me."
Ranger returned the letters to the silver tray.
"No."
"No?"
"Junkman is still out there."
"Have you made any progress?"
"We have a name," Ranger said. "Norman Carver."
"Norman's not going to be at the mall, and excuse me, you're blocking the door."
"Give it a rest," Ranger said.
"Give it a rest yourself," I said, giving him a shot to the shoulder. "Get out of my way."
All day long, the car keys had been sitting in the dish. And truth is, I didn't actually believe Ranger told his guys to stun gun me. I'd stayed in the apartment because I didn't want to die. And I still didn't want to die. But I was resenting the passive role I was forced to play. I was antsy, and I was unhappy. I wanted my life to be different. I wanted to be Ranger. He was good at being a tough guy. I was crappy at it. I was also finding it ironic that I'd walked out on Morelli only to find myself in the same position with Ranger. I gave Ranger another shove, and he shoved back, pinning me to the wall with his body.
"I've had a long, unsatisfying day," Ranger said. "I'm low on patience. Don't push me."
He was effortlessly leaning into me, holding me there with his weight, and I was immobilized. Not only was I immobilized, I was starting to get turned on.
"This really pisses me off," I said.
He'd been out all day, and he still smelled wonderful. The warmth was oozing into me. His cheek was resting against the side of my head. His hands were flat against the wall, framing my shoulders. Without thinking, I snuggled into him and brushed my lips across his neck in a light kiss.
"No fair," he said.
I shifted under him and felt him stir against me.
"I've got the weight and the muscle," he said, "but I'm starting to think you've got the power."
"Do I have enough power to persuade you to take me shopping?"
"God doesn't have that much power. Did Ella bring dinner up?"
"About 10 minutes ago. It's in the kitchen."
He pushed away from me, ruffled my hair, and went to the kitchen in search of food. The door was left unattended. The car keys were in the dish.
"Arrogant bastard," I yelled after him.
He turned and flashed me the full-on smile. I was still at the breakfast table when Ranger came out of the bedroom wearing a fully loaded utility belt and an unzipped flak jacket.
"Try not to get too crazy today," he said, heading for the door.
"Yeah," I said, "and you should try not to get shot."
It was a disturbing goodbye, because we both meant what we said. At 5 o'clock, Lula called on my cell phone.
"They got him," she said. "Connie and me have been listening to the police channel, and we just heard that they got Junkman."
"Any details?"
"Not much. It sounded to us like he got stopped for running a red, and when they checked him out, they got lucky."
"No one was hurt?"
"No call went out."
I felt weak with relief.
it was over. Thanks, I said. I'll see you tomorrow.
Have fun, Lula said.
If I hurried, I could pick something up for Valerie and make the shower. I left a note to Ranger, grabbed the keys to the turbo, and took the elevator to the garage. The elevator doors opened at garage level, and Hal burst out of the stairwell door.
Excuse me, he said. Ranger would prefer that you stay in the building.
It's okay, I told him. Code Red is over, and I'm going shopping.
I'm afraid I can't let you do that.
So Ranger hadn't been yanking my chain. He'd actually given orders to keep me here. Men, I said, you're all a bunch of chauvinist morons. Hal didn't have anything to say to that. Get out of my way, I said to him.
I can't let you leave the building, he said.
And how are you going to stop me? He shifted uncomfortably from foot to foot. He had a stun gun in his hand. Well, I asked.
I'm supposed to stun you if I have to.
Okay, let me get this straight. You're going to stun gun the woman who's been living with Ranger? Hal's face was red, leaning toward purple.
Don't give me a hard time, he said. I like this job, and I'll lose it if I screw up with you.
You touch me with that stun gun, and I'll have you arrested for assault. You won't have to worry about this job.
Jeez, Hal said.
Wait a minute, I said. Let me see the gun for just a second. Hal held the stun gun out to me. I took it, pressed it to his arm, and he went down like a ton of bricks. Hal wasn't a bad guy, but he was dumb as a box of rocks. I leaned over him to make sure he was breathing, gave him his gun back, got into the turbo, and motored out of the garage. I knew the control room would see me on the screen, and someone would check on Hal. I hated to stun him, but I was a woman on a mission. I needed a shower gift. Ordinarily, I'd go to the mall off Route 1, but I didn't have a lot of time, and I was worried about traffic. So I stopped at an electronics store on the way across town and bought Valerie a picture cell phone and a year's service. It wasn't a real bridey present, but I knew she needed a phone and couldn't afford to buy one for herself. I swung into a pharmacy and got a card and a gift bag, and I was in business. I could have been a little more dressed. Sneakers and jeans, a white stretchy t-shirt and denim jacket wasn't standard fare for a Berg shower, but it was the best I could do without making another stop. The lot was filled when I got to the hall. The big yellow school bus was parked at the edge. My mother had hired Sally and his band to entertain. Joanne Waleski was catering. When we did a shower in the Berg, we really did a shower. I was in the lot when my cell phone rang.
Babe, Ranger said, what are you doing at the VFW?
Valerie shower. Is Hal okay?
Yeah, you were caught on camera again. The men in the control room were laughing so hard when you stunned Hal, they couldn't get down the stairs fast enough to stop you from leaving the garage.
I heard they caught Junkman, so I thought it was okay to leave.
I heard that too, but I haven't been able to confirm the capture. I've got a man on you. Try not to destroy him.
Disconnect. I went into the hall and looked for Grandma. Sally was on stage, doing rap in a red cocktail dress and red sequined heels. The rest of the band was in gargantuan t-shirts and baggy-ass pants. It was too noisy to hear my phone ring, but I felt the vibration. Stephanie, my mother said, is your sister with you? She was supposed to be here an hour ago. Did you call the apartment? Yes, I talked to Albert. He said Valerie wasn't there. He said she took off in the Buick. I thought maybe she got confused and went to the shower without me. She's been getting confused a lot lately. Valerie doesn't have a Buick. She was having problems with her car, so she borrowed Uncle Sandor's Buick yesterday. I got a sick feeling in my stomach. I'll get back to you. I located Grandma and asked if she'd seen Valerie. Nope, Grandma said, but she better show up soon. The natives are restless. I went out to the lot, got the gun Ranger always kept under the seat, and put it in my denim jacket pocket. Somewhere in the lot was a black SUV with Ranger's man in it. I thought that was a good thing. And my sister was somewhere in the powder blue Buick. That was a bad thing. I was associated with the powder blue Buick. That's why I wasn't driving it.
I thought it was safely locked up in my parents' garage. Out of sight, out of the Slayer's minds. Not to panic, I told myself. Junkman was in jail, and probably Valerie was in a bar trying to get numb enough to survive the shower. I just hoped she didn't pass out before she got to the hall. I called Morelli. You've got Junkman locked up in jail, right? I asked him.
We've got someone locked up in jail. We're not sure who he is. He's telling us he's Junkman, but he's not checking out. He was driving a car with California plates belonging to Norman Carver, and gang intelligence tells us Junkman's name is Norman Carver.
So, what's the problem?
He's too short. According to California DMV, Carver's a big guy, and we got a little guy.
No ID on him?
None.
Tattoos?
None.
That's not good.
Tell me about it, Morelli said. Where are you?
Valerie's shower.
I'm assuming Ranger's got a man on you?
That's what he tells me.
Poor dumb bastard, Morelli said,
and he hung up. I wasn't sure what to do next. Part of me wanted to run back to the safety of Ranger's building. Part of me wanted to go inside the hall and fill my plate with meatballs. And part of me worried about Valerie. The worrying about Valerie part was at the front of the line. Problem was, I hadn't a clue where to look for Valerie. I saw my mother pull into the lot and park. She hurried out of the car, and I met her before she got to the door.
I left your father at home to wait for Valerie, she said. I can't imagine what's happened to her. I hope she hasn't been in a car crash. Do you think I should call the hospital?
I was mentally gnawing on my fingernails. I wasn't worried about a car crash. I was worried that Valerie had been spotted by a Slayer. I was worried that they sometimes staked out places I was known to frequent, like my apartment. Not a thought I wanted to share with my mother. I had my phone in my hand, and I was about to call Morelli back when I heard a familiar rumble. It was the sound of gas getting sucked into an internal combustion engine at an astonishing rate. It was the Buick. Valerie swung Big Blue into the lot and parked in handicapped parking a couple feet from my mother and me. Neither of us said anything because we both thought Val qualified.
I got lost, she said. I left the apartment and I had so much on my mind, I guess I was on autopilot. Anyway, next thing I knew, I was on the other side of town by Helen Fold Hospital.
I got a head-to-toe chill. She'd been way too close to Slayerland. In fact, she probably passed over Comstock. Thank goodness luck had been with her, and she'd found her way to the VFW unharmed. Grandma appeared at the front door to the hall.
There you are, she said. Hurry up inside. The band ran out of steam and had to go outside to smoke some weed. I don't know why anybody want to smoke weeds, but that's what they said. And worse than that, we're going to run out of food if we don't get this crowd to sit down soon.
I still didn't feel comfortable with the Buick being out on the streets, and I especially didn't want Valerie driving it home to my apartment. Give me your key, I said to Valerie. I'll move the car out of the handicapped spot. Way out, all the way to my parents' garage. Val gave me the keys, and everyone went inside. I got into the Buick and started it up. I backed out of the parking lot, and I cruised the length of the lot to the exit. I'd spotted Ranger's man parked across the street. It was a smart spot that gave him full view of the entrance to the lot and the front door to the hall. Unfortunately, he didn't have a good view of the exit, so I made a left turn out of the lot to circle the block and come alongside him. He could follow me to my parents' house, and then he could give me a ride back to the hall. Val could go home with either my mother or me. I barely made the turn out of the lot when the black Hummer came out of nowhere, swerved around me, and pulled in front, forcing me into a parked car. I leaned on the horn and reached for Ranger's gun, but I had two guys on me before I got the gun in my hand. I did all the things I knew I was supposed to do. Put up a fight, make noise, and it didn't matter. In a matter of seconds, I was yanked from behind the wheel and dragged around to the back of the Buick. The trunk was opened, and I was shoved in. The trunk slammed shut, and that was it. The world went black. Chapter 16.
I remember seeing a nature show on television where a ground squirrel was hiding in an underground den, and a wolverine reached in and grabbed the ground squirrel. It happened so fast it was a blur on the screen. That's the way it is with disaster. In an instant, your future can disappear, and nothing can adequately prepare you for the moment. There's a millisecond of surprise, and then a heaviness of heart when finality is recognized. I didn't have the gun. It had fallen out of my pocket in the scramble, and I didn't have my cell phone. My phone was in my purse, and my purse was inside the car. I'd made some noise, so there was a possibility that Ranger's man might have heard me. I didn't think the possibility was good. There might have been a way to open the trunk from the inside, but I was at a loss. It was an old car, designed before safety features like interior opening trunk lids. I felt around the lock area, trying to pry the lid up with my nails, trying to trip a catch that I couldn't see. I was twisted into a fetal position, wrapped around and on top of a spare tire. I knew there had to be a tire iron in the trunk. If I found the tire iron, I might be able to force the trunk open, or I might be able to do some damage when one of the slayers opened the trunk, enough to give me a chance to run. The air was thick with the smell of tire, and the total blackness was smothering. Still, the smothering blackness was better than what awaited me when the trunk was opened. More irony, I thought. I drove Anton Ward to the shore like this, and here I am being driven to my fate under the same frightening, painful conditions. The Catholic in me rose to the surface. What goes around, comes around. I gave up searching for the tire iron. Probably it was under the tire. And try as I might, I couldn't get myself into a position to get under the tire. So I concentrated my energies on kicking at the trunk and yelling. The car was stopping for lights and pausing at intersections. Maybe someone would hear me. I was so absorbed in kicking and yelling that I missed the moment when the engine cut off. I was in mid-scream when the trunk was opened, and I looked up into the faces of the men who'd abducted me. After all my recoveries, I was on the other side. I'd always thought in a situation like this, the major emotion I'd feel would be terror. But my major emotion was anger. I'd been taken away from my sister's shower. How freaking rude is that? And on top of it, I was still dieting and I was cranky as hell. There'd been meatballs at the shower and sheet cake. I'd been steadily working myself into a frenzy while I was in the trunk thinking about the sheet cake. I glared out at the faces of the degenerate losers who'd kidnapped me, and I wanted to get close enough to them to sink my thumbs into their eye sockets. I wanted to draw blood with my nails. I was hauled out of the trunk in full rant and dragged across the street to a bleak vest pocket playground. The playground equipment was skeletal, covered with gang graffiti. The ground was littered with bottles and cans and fast food wrappers. The lighting was eerie. Dark shadows and an unearthly green wash from an overhead streetlight. The playground was surrounded by four-story brick apartment buildings. Windows were tightly shut and shades drawn on the park exposure. No one wanted to see or hear what transpired here. This was the middle of the 700 block of Comstock Street. This was Slayerland. Someone had painted a large white circle onto the cracked blacktop. I was shoved into the circle, and the members gathered around, careful not to step inside. Most of them were young, in their teens or early 20s. Hard to say how many there were. Could be 10, could be 50. I was still in a blind rage, too crazed to count. A big guy stepped forward, his face lost in the shadow of his hooded sweatshirt. Junk man.
"This is the circle where we try the enemy," he said. "If you're not a member, you're the enemy. We already disposed of three of the enemy. This is your night. Are you the enemy?"
I didn't say anything. His fist swung out and caught me on the side of my face. The impact cracked like a rifle shot inside my head. My teeth cut into my bottom lip, and I staggered back. A roar went up from the group, and hands grabbed at me, holding fast to my jacket, tearing my t-shirt. I lurched away, sacrificing the jacket to the grabbing men, going down to one knee. This is the game, I thought, crawling to the relative safety of the center of the circle. They can't put a foot inside the ring. Only Junkman was inside the ring. And Junkman would continue to hit me until I was dragged out of the circle by the grabbing hands. And once I was out of the circle, I guessed I was at the mercy of the gang, and they would do whatever it was that crazed, depraved mobs did to women. Junkman pulled me to my feet and hit me with another roundhouse swing, the force of the blow sending me to the circle's edge. I tried to escape to the center, but one of the men had a handful of t-shirt, and another had me by the hair. I was yanked over the line and hand-passed deep into the mob, and brought face to face with Eugene Brown.
"Remember me?" Eugene asked. "You ran over me. Now I'm going to be the first to run over you."
My nose was running, and my vision was blurred by tears. Hard to say if the tears were from fright or from roiling, flaming fury. I didn't think I had a lot to lose by getting in one last kick. So I swung from the knee with as much power as I could find, and I caught Brown square on the crotch with my toe. He doubled over and went to the ground. I'd probably get raped by every other member of the gang, but I had the satisfaction of depriving Eugene Brown of the honor. I'd shoved Brown's nuts halfway up his throat. Brown wasn't going to be raping anyone for a while. A murmur rippled through the men behind me. I was ready to kick out again, but the mob's attention had shifted to the street. Several blocks south, a single set of headlights could be seen moving forward down Comstock. There had been no traffic on the street prior to this. Probably there were Slayer sentries redirecting cars, or maybe no one dared to travel the street after dark. I prayed that it was Joe or Ranger's man in the SUV. No red light flashing. Hard to tell what sort of vehicle was attached to the headlights. Everyone was watching the approaching vehicle. No one spoke. Guns were drawn. The vehicle was a block away.
"What the?"
one of the men said. It was a big, yellow school bus. The disappointment was crushing. I knew who drove the bus, and it was unlikely he could pull off a rescue. His intentions were undoubtedly heroic, but I was worried that not only couldn't he save me, he probably was rushing to his own death. The bus was barreling down the street at an alarming rate, bouncing and swaying, barely under control. It was surreal. It was riveting, and the mob watched in stupefied silence. The bus went into a skid as it came abreast of the playground. It jumped the curb and plowed into the stunned gang members, brakes squealing, gang members yelling and scrambling to get out of the way. The bus lurched to a smoking stop in the middle of the circle. The door to the bus opened with a whoosh, and Sally wobbled out, all long, gangly, hairy legs and knobby knees, in his red chiffon cocktail dress and 4-inch red sequined heels. His hair was Wild Man of Borneo. His eyes were dilated to the size of quarters. I had a split second of mind-numbing terror for Sally, and then I saw that he was two-handing an Uzi.
"Rock and roll," Sally said.
A bullet zinged past him and bounced off the bus. I dropped flat to the ground, and Sally squeezed off what sounded to me like about 700 rounds. When the dust settled, there were several bloody bodies writhing in pain on the blacktop. Some had been run over, and some had been shot. Fortunately, I wasn't one of them. Junkman had been one of those run over, his feet sticking out from under the bus like the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz. The rest of the Slayers had scattered like cockroaches when the light goes on.
"Fudge," Sally said. "Freakin' fuckin' fudge."
"Guess you were scared, huh?"
"Mother freakin' fuckin' fudge," he said. "I almost pissed myself."
I was surprisingly calm. My life had taken on a feature film quality. I was living Die Hard in Trenton, and Bruce Willis was in drag. And I wasn't dead. I wasn't raped. I was almost completely dressed. I was beyond calm. I was euphoric. The anger was gone. Sirens and lights were flashing in the distance. Lots of headlights. It looked like everything but the Marines were on their way to the playground. There were a bunch of dropped guns on the blacktop. I kicked them around to make sure all of the guys Sally'd nailed had a gun by him, not within reach, but close enough to believe they'd first drawn on Sally. Two heads popped out of the bus door. The rest of the band.
"Holy shit,"
one guy said. And they both retreated back into the bus and closed the door.
"We were taking a break out back, and I saw them grab you," Sally said. "I couldn't get across the parking lot fast enough to stop them, so I ran and got the bus. By the time I got it started up and out of the lot, you were gone, but I got to thinking about this spot. I drive by here all the time on my route, and the kids talk about it, and how this is where the beatings and killings happen."
The first car to arrive was a Trenton PD blue and white. It slid to a stop behind the bus, and Robin Russell got out, gun drawn, eyes wide.
"Holy Toledo," she said.
"I called everyone I could think of while I was driving," Sally said, "including the fire department."
No shit. I was going to have a seizure from the flashing lights. Ranger pulled to a stop behind Russell's blue and white, and Morelli was behind Ranger. Morelli had his portable Kojak light, flashing red, stuck to the roof of his SUV. I knew he had to have flown through town to get here this fast. Morelli and Ranger hit the ground running. They slowed when they saw Sally and me standing in the middle of the massacre, the Uzi dangling from Sally's trigger finger. I smiled at Morelli and Ranger and gave them a small wave. "My heroes," I said to Sally, upstaged by a guy in a red dress and heels.
"Freaking humbling," Sally said.
Robin Russell was already securing the crime scene with tape. Ranger and Morelli slipped under the tape and picked their way around the bodies.
"Hi," I said to them. "What's up?"
"Not a lot," Morelli said. "What's up with you?"
"Same old, same old."
"Yeah, I can see that," Morelli said.
"You remember Sally Sweet?" I said. Ranger and Sally shook hands, and Joe and Sally shook hands.
"Sally mowed all these slayers," I said.
"I made sort of a mess," Sally said. "I didn't mean to run over them like this. I tried to stop, but the brakes aren't what they used to be on old Betsy, and it's friggin' hard to, you know, brake in heels. But what the hell? It turned out okay, right? All's well that ends well."
Morelli and Ranger were both trying hard not to smile too wide.
"There's a nice reward being offered on Junkman," Morelli said to Sally. 10 big ones."
Ranger looked at the gun Sally was holding.
"Do you always carry an Uzi?"
"I keep it in the bus," Sally said. "Gotta protect the little dudes. I tried an AK-47, but it wouldn't fit under my seat. I like the Uzi better anyway. It looks better with the dress. The AK seems too casual to me."
"It's important to accessorize properly," I said.
"Fudgin' A," Sally said.
We hope you have enjoyed 10 Big Ones, an audio renaissance audiobook from St. Martin's Press. This program was produced by Laura Wilson and directed by Laura Wilson and John Sherry. Text copyright 2004 by Ivanovich Inc. Production copyright 2004 Audio Renaissance, a division of Holtzbrinck Publishers, LLC. All rights reserved.
This is Mary Beth Roach, publisher for Audio Renaissance. Here's a bonus interview with Janet Ivanovich. Janet, what made you decide to become a writer?
I started out as a painter. I was always the kid that could draw. And then when I was at home being a stay-at-home mom, painting just wasn't working for me anymore. I decided that the communication was a little bit too vague. I'd found that I could make people laugh, that I could be funny, and I really loved this. I loved the idea that I might be able to entertain people. And the truth is, I think of myself more as an entertainer than as a writer. I love the idea that I can just, you know, my word can go out worldwide and I can make people happy.
Now you're writing mystery novels, but you started out writing romances. What made you decide to change genres?
Well, I started out as a romance writer, and I loved many things about it. I loved the audience. I love that it was very positive, that the romance novels always ended on a good note. I love the very positive characters. I'm a very character-driven writer. But as time went on, as I wrote more and more books, what I realized is that I was having a hard time getting pages out of sheer relationship. I really loved the action parts. I didn't especially like writing all the complicated sex scenes. You know, it was a little embarrassing. I think I sort of ran out of sexual positions by about book five, didn't know where to go with that one, and decided that I wanted to move over. Actually, what I really wanted to do was to write an adventure story. I'm found in the mystery section, but I think this is Indiana Jones in Trenton, New Jersey.
Do you have a particular routine when you're writing?
My routine is that I write all the time. I'm up very early in the morning, especially now that the more successful you become, the more complicated your life gets, because you're not only a writer, but you're also a business person and a media person. So I start my day at about 5:30. I get up, I get a cup of coffee, I take my cat Gus, and we go into my office. I work on a computer. And I start my day. And I like to keep the momentum going. I like when I can write every day. I like when I can really get a good chunk of hours in. So I work through all of the morning. I work until about 2, maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then I break for some exercise. I have a little gym in the house because I haven't got a lot of time to go out and drive to a gym anymore. I stop for supper. Sometimes we go out to dinner with friends. Usually we eat in. And then in the evenings, I work for a couple more hours. And usually that's on non-writing stuff. That's working with my daughter on the website. It's answering fan mail. I have 2 personal assistants who help me with the mail, but we read every letter that comes in. We answer every letter that comes in. And so these things are done for an hour or two in the evening. And then I stop and I have a glass of wine, and I sit down and I watch some television with my husband.
It's interesting that the character, Stephanie Plum, stays very close to home. Did you make a decision at some point that she'd be a real local girl?
Yes, I wanted to take the series back to Jersey, and I thought that she probably would not be traveling to a lot of exotic locations. I think that this is a series of small crimes. Stephanie Plum is, you know, she's kind of a heroine in a phone booth. Her world is not that large. The crimes, this is not an international thriller series. This is a series about local crime and local people and very ordinary people. And it's a series about heroes, small heroes. I love the hero theme, and it's very important to me, especially in this world. I think that we all need heroes, and that the heroes are local. You know, they're the cops, they're the firemen. This is the kind of hero that I deal with.
Who do you like better, Joe or Ranger?
It really depends on the day. Some days I like Joe. You know, I love when he's sitting around with Stephanie and they're eating pizza and he's just this great, normal guy. And, you know, he's sexy. He's got on a pair of jeans and he looks just great in his jeans and he's teasing Stephanie. And then I wake up the next day and I'm a Ranger woman and I want to have this superhero. Ranger is kind of a superhero. You know, he's not, it depends on your point of view. Some days you want to have the average guy who maybe is a little bit, more attractive and sexier than you might see most men on the street. But he belongs to you, doesn't he? And then the next day, you want to have the superhero, the Ranger who can open doors when nobody else can get in the door and who has the ability to protect you and to do whatever it is, you know, whatever it takes to make you happy.
Do you enjoy listening to audiobooks yourself? And if so, where do you listen?
I do. I love listening to audiobooks, and I mostly listen in the car when I'm on long car trips. I go down to Boston a lot. You know, I live in New Hampshire, which is a wonderful place, and it's beautiful, and it's a great place to write. But I need my city fix a lot. So I spend a lot of time in cars going down to Boston and to New York. It's about a 5-hour car trip to New York. So I use up a lot of audiobooks. This is the way that I catch up on all of my reading because I really have very little time to read. So when I'm in the car, I can listen to all of my favorite authors and catch up on all the books.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.